Hi, David Reamer. Welcome to Cable.
It's a pleasure to join you again, Bill.
Hi, folks. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole. Last Friday, I interviewed David Reamer, a liberal policy wonk, but a pragmatist who works to get things done. Active in politics since graduating law school, he served as the state of Wisconsin budget director and in policymaking positions with two Wisconsin governors, with the mayor of Milwaukee, and with Ted Kennedy. Our interview is about his latest book, somewhat misleadingly called Putting Government in Its Place, The Case for a New Deal 3.0. But no reader will be fooled, for David insists throughout the book that state policy and action are absolutely necessary, indeed crucial for building a successful nation, including capitalist nations. And the book is overflowing with needed changes in policy. It's a real program, detailed, concrete. Could be the program of a political party united and working for those changes and transformations. I proposed to them, to David, exploring two issues, both rapidly becoming crisis, that because of their near universal impacts are sure to grow to become front and center, must confront issues of national policy. The first is income insecurity for my guess is a majority of the U.S. population, including the elderly. People becoming elderly and finding themselves with no money, and also low-income precarious workers. The second great issue that must be confronted in the coming world is global warming. Climate scientists say that, in fact, global warming could undermine the climate system upon which human life depends and could do it soon if tipping points that are now appearing, that is, great volumes of greenhouse gas pollution, carbon dioxide and methane, are bubbling up in the surface of some under the ocean, some under the melting permafrost. There are many different possibilities, unfortunately, for an out-of-control global warming. First, tell us about the rampant insecurity in U.S. life and what must be done.
Glad to talk about that. Obviously, when Franklin Roosevelt took office in 1933 after defeating Herbert Hoover prior November and put together his New Deal team, including Frances Perkins, the first woman ever to be in a cabinet position, an incredibly important job Roosevelt asked her to fill as Secretary of Labor, brought in Harry Hopkins to run, or initially relief programs, welfare programs that provided cash, but pretty quickly, most of that effort turned to creating jobs programs like Works Progress Administration or the WPA. The situation that they confronted was just dramatically worse than anything the United States had experienced in terms of its economy in its entire history. The unemployment rate, the way of measuring it, wasn't as good as it is today, but 20, 25, in some places, 30% of workers were out of work. Wages were being cut, people were being evicted, foreclosures were happening all the time, and we're not even talking about the stock market crash that occurred several years before, and the stock market was still in the doldrums. Banks all over the country were collapsing. I think I read somewhere that when Roosevelt took office in March of 1933, the number of banks, the states that had shut their banks, was, I think, 34. There were only 48 states at the time, and 34 states had completely shut their bank systems down. And just the day before he took office, actually hours before he took office, the governors of the three biggest states, New York, Illinois, and Pennsylvania, at that time, those were the biggest states in 1933, they ordered their state banks to close indefinitely. So the nation was collapsing. And the single biggest problem, and Roosevelt talked about it in his inaugural address, the single biggest problem was unemployment, massive, massive unemployment. So Roosevelt immediately got to work dealing with really all aspects of economic insecurity. Fairly quickly, he created the Civilian Conservation Corps. Within a year, he created something called the Civil Works Administration, which was the precursor of the Works Progress Administration. These jobs programs put 3-4 million people into wage-paying jobs at any one time, all across the country. There were problems in their administration. There was segregation. Blacks, Hispanics, and women were not given equal treatment. Nonetheless, to some extent, they were included. But these jobs literally saved hundreds of thousands of people from starving, from eviction. But Roosevelt didn't stop there. He recognized that economic security, while it was perhaps first and foremost about making sure that the largest possible number of people who could work and wanted to work had wage-paying jobs, he also turned to what you get from a job. So a couple years later, we had the Fair Labor Standards Act that set for the very first time a federal minimum wage, as well as maximum hours and, I believe, restricted child labor. A couple years before that, the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act, let workers form unions. Prior to that, they had often been struck down as being illegal conspiracies. Well, that changed with the Wagner Act. Unions bargained, the number of unions and unionized workers increased. So that was another sort of front in the effort to deal with economic insecurity. But it went beyond that. Most people know that the jewel in the crown of the New Deal was the Social Security Act. Francis Perkins was in charge of a committee that put that law together, and it produced unemployment insurance. So income for unemployed workers, particularly those who weren't able to get into some of those WPA jobs. It created what most people just call Social Security, the old age pension program that so many Americans rely on. Roosevelt also proposed disability insurance, but had to pull that back because of the difficulty of getting it through Congress. And he also proposed national health insurance. A lot of people don't know that. But he proposed a comprehensive system of health insurance. Again, that was not able to make it through because at the time of the opposition of the AMA. So this was a sweeping effort to deal with jobs for the unemployed, higher wages for workers, even higher wages above the minimum wage if unions could form and bargain collectively for a higher wage. And we also had income for retired seniors. It took a while for the revenue paid into Social Security to let the first person get a paycheck. But eventually that happened while FDR was still president. Disability insurance was kind of put into the wings, but eventually that became law. The New Deal was a model for a lot of things that didn't get enacted during the New Deal. It happened later. So actually, disability insurance came about during the Eisenhower administration. Chunks of national health insurance came about with Medicare, Medicaid, and then Obamacare in the 60s and really into the current century. So it set this pattern. So we were providing security to some extent for the unemployed through those WPA jobs and unemployment insurance, for workers through the minimum wage and collective bargaining, for people who weren't in the labor market because of disability, eventually old age, that part of the Social Security Act. It was an extraordinary change. And in addition to this, just one other dimension of economic insecurity, well, part of the insecurity that people experienced during the Depression and even a little bit during the New Deal was they'd lost their savings. Banks had collapsed and their money was gone, or they'd invested in bogus stocks because of lying or just other forms of misleading representations, and more of their savings were gone. Well, that started to change because Roosevelt got the Banking Act passed, got the Securities Act passed. So what people were putting in the banks, or if they were, you know, in a fortunate enough position, arguably, to buy stocks, they had much greater protection. Part of the Banking Act provided deposit insurance so that your savings up to a certain amount were insured by the federal government, a kind of revolutionary concept, again, a form of economic security. It was a dramatic breakthrough. But part of what I argue in my book is it wasn't enough. Even Roosevelt knew it wasn't enough, but he couldn't get everything through that he wanted. And frankly, some of the problems that now workers are experiencing, like jobs that are not only part-time, but where the hours are constantly shifting as employers figure out when they want you, when they don't want you. Back then, the issue was, did you have a job or didn't you have a job? But if you had one, it was more likely to be, you know, 40 hours a week, fairly stable, unless you were fired or laid off. But now we have not only some firings and layoffs, but we have people told, well, we don't need you for your regular shift on Tuesday. We want you to come in on Wednesday night. Well, that's well and good for the employer, but what if the worker can't get there because the bus system is shut down, or they need childcare for that second shift? So new forms of insecurity have arisen. So this is what we need to do. We need to tackle the shortcomings of the labor market that existed back then and that to some extent still exist today. Not everyone can find work. Not everybody gets paid enough. Not people who aren't in the labor market on disability or Social Security, the minimum benefit isn't enough to get them well above the poverty line. And then we've got these new forms of insecurity, like unstable hours, erratic earnings, still people making investments, you know, like in cryptocurrency that they get wiped out. So government still has a lot to do to protect the ordinary folks, the people who work hard, pay their taxes, contribute to society, and then, to put it bluntly, get screwed in one way or another by the shortcomings of the labor market and other shortcomings of the market.
You know, what was surprising to me in reading all the history of the Roosevelt New Deal is that, in fact, the New Deal never got the U.S. out of the Depression. That is, in 1937, it looked as if it was getting out of the Depression, but the Congress was conservative and cut off funding of many of the programs, and then the Depression resumed. And it wasn't until Pearl Harbor, and that is when the public rose up to demand that the U.S. get into the war and particularly provide the weapons for some of our allies in Europe, but also raise armies here, that the Depression really ended and unemployment was more than full. People who had never had a job, especially women, were getting jobs in the factories at good wages. There was nothing to spend money on because many luxury items were not available or food was rationed. Cars were not being built. They saved a lot of money, and that made for a housing boom after the war. And the U.S. came out of the war with a very different economy. In fact, basically run on Keynesian principles. When a recession happened, you counter it by creating demand for goods. Mm-hmm. And the economy just kept sometimes falling into recession, but always jump-started out of it. And huge growth trajectory.
Right.
My sense is that it will take a kind of crisis so that the people, instead of just sort of defending what they have, recognizing they're going to lose everything unless we begin, we move in a very different direction. And my sense is that the climate crisis is going to take precedence over the income crisis. But in the climate crisis, we really have to transform all industry. In fact, to a much greater extent, for a time at least, to meet the challenge of climate change and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It seems to me that's going to be the agency, the driver of a movement in the United States from below that will deal with not just climate change, but income precarity and better pensions, more Social Security for so many elderly who have no savings, right?
Let me comment on, I agree with everything you've said, particularly in broad outline. A couple of sort of comments on the decline in unemployment during the time Roosevelt was president. Your basic description of it is absolutely correct. Huge rates of unemployment, they decreased until 1937. And frankly, Roosevelt and Congress were persuaded to cut back on some of the programs. And there was a second, I'm not sure whether to call it a second depression or a second very big recession, but the unemployment rate went up sharply, then it came down again. But there's one thing that a lot of folks aren't aware of. I wasn't aware of this until recently. The unemployment rate that was official and that was used throughout that period treated the people who were actually working for wages in those WPA and CCC and other government finance jobs, treated them as if they were unemployed, not as employed. So if you treat those people as employed, the unemployment rate drops pretty significantly. So for example, in 1936-37, the official unemployment rate had dropped from about 25% to 15%. But because of those jobs programs, if you count those WPA, et cetera, workers as not being unemployed, but being employed, which they were, the unemployment rate actually dipped below 10%. Then after the 1937 sort of partial reversal, and then once again, things got back on track. Even before Pearl Harbor, what I call the real unemployment rate, counting those WPA workers as employed, once again dropped below 10%. Now, 10% is a really high unemployment rate. You can argue it's depression-like. On the other hand, it's dramatically less than when Roosevelt took office and unemployment was 25 or 30%. And of course, you're absolutely correct. Because of the build-up to the war, Lend-Lease and other programs, and then, of course, you know, December 7th, 1941, the date of infamy, and on into the war, unemployment dropped to 2, 3, 1%. Pretty much anybody who could fog a mirror had a job, either in the regular economy or in the war industries or in the armed services. But let me talk about climate change. This was obviously not an issue during the New Deal. Frankly, only in the maybe 60s or 70s did anybody begin to talk about this as a concern. It's really only come to the fore as a major issue in recent decades. But there are some really important lessons, I think, from the New Deal that bear on this. First, at the 10,000-foot level, Franklin Roosevelt and the New Dealers' approach to running the United States was, let us tackle the biggest threats that we have. And if that means dramatically pivoting from one threat to another, then we've got to do that. We can't just keep pretending that a new threat has not emerged. So, yes, from 1933 until 1940, 41, the biggest threat was the Depression, getting out of the Depression, getting the economy back on track. But even before Pearl Harbor, Roosevelt and some of the people in the government began to see the rise of Nazi Germany with its, you know, sort of partner, you know, Mussolini's Italy, and the conquest of much of Europe as the greatest threat. So Franklin Roosevelt took his loyal aide, Harry Hopkins, who had run these jobs programs, and said, I want to take you off of that responsibility and send you over to England to negotiate lend-lease with Winston Churchill. 1941 comes to an end, Pearl Harbor. Then obviously Roosevelt and all of his New Deal team, Francis Perkins, was heavily involved in recruiting people for the war industries and making sure that strikes did not happen to throw a roadblock into the production of things. Harry Hopkins repeatedly went to England and also to the Soviet Union to try to bolster our allies, no matter how distasteful Stalin's regime was. They were on our side fighting Hitler and so on. So this willingness to pivot to the greatest threat, even if it wasn't widely recognized, I think in some ways sort of foreshadows what we need to see among our leaders in this country. You're right. They need to see climate change as one of the really greatest, perhaps the greatest threat, not just to the United States and our health and our survival, but to the world and itself and its survival. A couple other things I just want to mention. For one thing, a fair number of the New Deal jobs programs were conservation programs. The New Deal has a mixed record on conservation. They were damming up rivers and straightening rivers out and building highways and other things that either immediately or directly were harmful to the environment. On the other hand, they were planting literally millions and millions and millions of trees and, you know, basically trying to cure the Dust Bowl in the middle part of the country. Roosevelt brought into existence several new national parks, at least one. You know, I visited the lodges in Olympic National Park in your neighboring state of Washington. That didn't used to be a national park, but Roosevelt himself went there, and the result was pretty shortly we had Olympic National Park. So there was all kinds of investments. And what that tells us is that one solution to both economic insecurity and climate change is to put young men and women to work planting trees and doing other environmental things that to some extent play a role in reducing CO2 emissions and improving the environment.
David, we have to end this conversation. It was very rich. Thank you so much, David Reamer.
Thank you, Bill, for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure.